Welcome to Start Healing with YFAC, the Yavapai Family Advocacy Center podcast. YFAC provides any and all types of support for victims of interpersonal crime in Yavapai County. Hi, I'm Missy Sikora. I'm the director at YFAC, and our first episode is going to be an overview of YFAC, the services we provide, and how people can get connected to us. Well, hi, welcome everybody. This is Missy Sikora. I'm the director at the Yavapai Family Advocacy Center, which we refer to as YFAC, so you'll hear me say that a lot during this. And we're here to talk today about the Advocacy Center and who we are and what we do and what services we provide in our community. So it started back in our county in the late 90s. Nationally, the Advocacy Center movement started in the mid 80s, and Advocacy Centers began to pop up as a result of the fact that there were a lot of studies and information showing that when a person was a victim of what we call interpersonal crime, and those are things like sexual assault, domestic violence, child abuse, human trafficking, elder abuse, stalking, those types of things, that once that is reported to the police, they kind of lose their voice. They are treated as almost like a piece of evidence. And throughout that process, many times people were giving up on the investigation, giving up on getting help, and then coming and reporting later that they felt as much or more victimized by that process of the investigation than they did from the assault itself, and that they wish they had never reported. So nationally, we wanted to do something about that, and what resulted from that was advocacy centers. There are advocacy centers that specialize in only children, and then some that specialize in only adult victims. And then there are advocacy centers like ours, which is a family advocacy center. We serve all ages. In 1998 or 99, Yavapai County put a group together to decide if we needed an advocacy center here. And that group was from leaders in all of the towns and municipalities around our county. And they brought in, at that time, the director of Prevent Child Abuse Arizona, a woman named Becky Ruffner. And so they looked at other advocacy centers. They read a lot of research. They talked to experts at the national level, in other states and around our state. And they determined, yes, this is definitely something that we need here as well. So, the advocacy center was opened in 2000. And we've been located in the same building ever since it opened. It is the original library for Prescott Valley. And it's on Bob and Yavapai on the corner. And so what we do there is we basically help facilitate that process of the investigation piece. We also give services. So I'm going to take this from two different tracks. If it is a current investigation, if a crime has just happened and someone calls the police will then connect them to our center, maybe for forensic services. So we do two types of forensic services at the center. We do forensic interviews. Those are primarily done on children, but they can be done on adults. And we do forensic medical exams, which is, in layman's term, a rape kit. All forensic medical exams for the whole county are done at our center. So we partner with every police agency. Those victims are brought to our center to have that exam done, as well as strangulation exams. That's a specific type of forensic exam as well. And the reason why those are not done at hospitals, a lot of people ask me that all the time, is that a person can go to a hospital or their doctor and get medically checked, and that will be the same quality of care they're getting from our nurses at our center. Treatment for injuries, testing for possible STDs, infections, those types of things. But there's specialized equipment that's needed to collect evidence if that's the goal. And our nurses are trained in how to use that equipment. And we actually get kits issued to us from the Department of Public Safety that then will be processed by our nurses and get sent back to the crime lab. We also have a specialized camera. So they, with a lot of different filters, so they can take many different pictures of bruises at different times and different depths. And so that aids, again, in the prosecution that's collected as evidence. The other specialized training our nurses have is when that case goes to trial, it's a very specific type of expert testimony that needs to be given in regards to the exam and what was collected and why, and what the patient said during that exam. So, although the end result for any medical professional, and our nurses are passionate about this, the top priority during that exam is the medical wellness of the patient, 100%. But while doing that, we are also going to be collecting that evidence. Forensic interviews are a way to talk to a person that has been a victim of a crime in a very open-ended, non-leading, non-threatening way that allows them to tell their story. We have a dedicated forensic interviewer, and that is a person who has been very highly trained, has a lot of ongoing extensive training, and their full-time job is to conduct these interviews with children and adults sometimes, as I said, to elicit this information in a way that is most comfortable. It's hard to talk about, but it's even harder to talk about something when you're being asked very pointed questions, right? Did this happen? When did it happen? Where did it happen? That's not the way we want to have these conversations. We want to open it up and say, tell me everything that happened from the beginning to the end when you were in this room or with this person or whatever. For a couple reasons. Number one, we're allowing them to tell the story at their own pace in their own words. So we're not putting words in their mouth. We're not, corrupting the evidence in any way. And we're not, interrogating them. Now, while that's being done, though, again, this is being collected as evidence. There are law enforcement officers, the experts in the investigation side of it are in another room watching it live. It's being audio and video recorded. They take those recordings with them for their evidence. Those recordings are provided in court when it goes to prosecution. And that person, again, has training and the ability to give expert testimony about why questions are asked in this way and about that forensic process. It is definitely proven to be the best way to talk to children. There has been some studies done by the FBI, National Division of Child Services. And it is most comfortable. Kids always tend to feel like they did something wrong in the process, right? That why did this happen to me? What did I do to cause it? Maybe the person that harmed them has told them it's their fault, has told them it's their mutual secret, it's their mutual thing, and that, you know, if they tell anybody, they're going to get in as much trouble as he does or she does. So we want to make sure that they aren't feeling more pressured to tell the story. When we do those interviews, if they're not ready to talk, we're not going to push the interview. We're going to give them a little bit of time and space in a safe environment and then bring them back in and talk to them again later. So as you can imagine, that's all a pretty scary process. When a person comes to the advocacy center, they are immediately assigned a victim advocate who's going to be their partner through all of this. And by their side, if you're a parent and your child is going through these types of forensic services, that's terrifying to be in the other room while your child's talking to a person or getting an exam. And that victim advocate is there to answer your questions, to give you support, to see what you need, to reassure you on what's going to happen next. And again, be with you through each of those steps. And through that process and as far into the future for anything that they may need from this victimization. So the other thing that our victim advocates will do is assist during that parent, that caregiver, or the victim themselves with just the immediate impact of what happened to them. 9 out of 10 times, or almost 10 out of 10 times, I should say, that a person is assaulted, it happens by somebody that they know. So that's a family member, a friend. And it can very often, in fact, more often than not, impact your living arrangement, impact your income and your resources. So it's important that we look at that holistic kind of approach to how we're going to help them. We are not just here to collect from you what we need, your evidence. We're here to say, hey, this is a really devastating thing that's happening in your life, and I'm here to support you through the entire process. So the advocate will talk to them about, you know, what does this look like right now today for you for the next 24, 48 hours? Do you have a safe place to go? Do you feel safe if you're there? Is that person maybe not in jail? Maybe going to come home 2 hours later, something like that. So, and if you don't feel safe, then we're going to help you figure out a place to be where you can feel safe. And then things like maybe your abuser pays for your phone and you don't have a phone now. Well, we're going to help you get a phone or give you a phone. You may not have resources for food, for gas in your car, those things. So all of those things, we know that when a person has, those are things that stop a person from reporting, right? When you think, if I tell anybody that this is happening, or if I leave this situation, I'm not going to be able to take care of myself or my children. So I have to stay. I have no choice. So that's what our victim advocates are experts at. They will help you file orders of protection, all the types of court paperwork that you might need for divorce or custody or injunctions against harassment, any of those things that might need to be filed so that legally a person can start to take steps to separate themselves from the person who's been victimizing them. And that's a scary process in itself too, going to the government building and, you know, trying to manage your way through filing all of these papers and knowing what to file and when and how. We also pay an attorney, a local attorney, to assist our clients when it's needed with cases that might be a little bit more difficult. And the other thing that we do at the Advocacy Center is we have 3 therapists that we contract with. So our advocate will be talking to somebody about that and making a referral to and it's not just a therapist. There are, you know, you can imagine with all the different types of medical doctors there are, there's a lot of different types of therapists, and some therapists specialize in trauma care and in helping a person process a trauma that's happened to them or a series of traumas that have happened to them. And so, we find those specific therapists, we contract with them, and then we pay them to give trauma therapy to the victims. And that may be, if it's a child victim, it might be that child. We will also give therapy to the parent. If it's the non-offending parent, or if both parents have tried to protect and aren't offenders, we will give them both therapy. We'll give it to the sibling in the home, because we know that when a person goes through something like this, it has such a rippling, devastating effect on their entire family unit. And unless we can help that whole family unit process this and heal, it's going to impact their family far into the future. We do support groups there. So that's a good way for victims to, and I say victims and I shouldn't say that, we call them clients at our center. But for our clients to connect with other people in a facilitated group, some of those are just simply arts and crafts based. Some of them are true healing kind of groups where you may go through different lessons around self-care and, the cycles of abuse. But it's a way for people to connect with other people that have gone through the same thing and realize that they're not alone and start to recognize that many of the patterns that they saw in their relationships are prevalent in many relationships where a person decides to assert power and control over someone else through abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, financial abuse, all those types of things. So that's really what our advocacy center is about. And that's what we do. And we have people that come there and come to us one time and are there, and then they're not ready and they may leave. We have people that come for the investigation process, but maybe have other sports in the community. And we have many people that come there that stay involved with us for months and even into years. And then the other track I was talking about, which kind of overlaps this, if a person has been a victim of any of these kinds of crimes in the past, and it could have been 50 years ago or 5 months ago, we don't care, or 5 days ago, and either they don't want law enforcement involved, or that piece is already behind them, it's already been handled, we will still give all of those other supportive services, therapy, victim advocacy, support group, assistance with court paperwork, anything that we can help with. We will still help that person with all of those without the law enforcement involvement. We partner with all of our law enforcement agencies. We value them so much, and we work really well with them, but we are not affiliated with any law enforcement agency. We are our own separate entity. Okay. So in talking about the fact that people can come to the center without contacting law enforcement, that is in any situation where the victim is an adult. If a victim is a child and they come to us on their own, which we've had happen, someone under the age of 18 as a child legally, or parents have tried to bring children to us to get services, but they don't want their family member to be, to have the police called on their family member. We are mandated reporters under law, and we will have to call police if that happens. So we tell them that up front. If somebody tries to talk to us about something that's happened to a child or it's a child themselves, we are really good at stopping them and saying, before you give me any information or details, I want you to know I'm a mandated reporter, and explaining what that means to them so they have the choice in telling us. Because to us, throughout this whole process, the reason why I love being part of YFAC so much is that this is 100% led by the client that comes to see us. Everything is their choice. Everything is their decision. And after being a person that worked for a government agency for a long time, it's easy to see where people lose their voice and they lose their ability to make their own choices in situations like this. And we understand that when you've come from an abusive relationship, that abuser took your choices, took your ability to make choices for yourself away, and they were making them for you, and they were making choices you didn't like. And it's a lot of times a nice, easy shift for someone to say, okay, well, now you're going to protect me, but I still want you to make my choices for me, because that's their comfort zone. Our goal is to empower them to know that they're strong enough to make their own choices, and that they want to make their own choices, that they want to gain control over their own life and their own identity. And that really propels them forward to not step into this again. I've been working with people who live in this type of a lifestyle for 35 years almost. It is unfortunately something that we see happen generationally in families. And in my opinion, that is because we are not getting the good quality wraparound care for a person when something happens. And as we all know, when you grow up in a family or an environment where there is abuse, then many of those people tend to grow up and either find someone else to abuse them or grow up and their role becomes that of the abuser. And so the Advocacy Center really wants to, again, as I said, take that approach where We're empowering the victims. We're helping them find their own voice. We're helping them become their own hero. And we are coming at this from a holistic approach where everything is led by them, guided by them. But we are, if there's anything in there that has nothing to do with the case, but it's impacting their life, and now it's become 10 times worse because of this, we're going to want to do everything we can to assist them and help them get that under control and managed as well. In conclusion, I just want to say I'm really excited to be doing this podcast and starting this series because in the beginning, I think I told you our advocacy center has been in Yampa County for 20 years, and I hear repeatedly that people don't know who we are or that we were here. Although last year in Yampa County, our center gave services to almost 1,500 victims. So we are well needed in our community and well used. And so I just am excited to let everybody know about us. We love giving tours. We love showing our place off, and we love talking about what we do. We need volunteers. We rely really heavy on volunteers. We rely on donations and community support, and we partner with all of our towns and municipalities. So I look forward to doing more podcasts, giving more information, and hearing from you. Well, I'm Missy, and I want to thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for tuning in to Start Healing with YFAC, the Yavapai Family Advocacy Center podcast. If you or someone you know needs assistance, please don't hesitate to contact us online at yfac.org or call us at 928-775-0669. Start Healing with YFAC is proud to be on Cast 11, Prescott's podcast network. Find us wherever you stream your podcasts.